The former Philadelphia Philly played in the 93 World Series, but we're here today to talk some Cubs 98 baseball. Mickey Morandini, great to see you, first of all. And I got to just confess at the gate here, I hated the Doug Glanville for Mickey Morandini trade. Glanville was the first interview I ever got. I was 23 years old. He was this super nice guy. I'm assuming you know Doug. This is terrible. And then you came over here and he went there. And I think it was a great trade for both teams and for both players. Would you agree?
I do agree. Dougie's a great guy. First off, I knew Dougie. Got to know him really well because I played with him for a little bit. Because I went back to Philly in 2000.
Right.
He was. And rarely do one for one trades work out, but this one did. I mean, I played really well. He went to Philly and played really well, and it filled two needs because Sandberg. And he went to Philly, and they needed a center fielder. So, like I said, it worked out for both teams.
Yeah, you broke up there for one second, but let me just – I think what you were jumping into is you were brought to Chicago to replace Ryan Sandberg, who had retired and had come back. So, right. I mean, it wasn't 1984 MVP Ryan Sandberg, but that's a pretty big name to step into.
It really was, and we actually have the same agent. So I knew Rhino a little bit, but it was some big shoes to fill, and fortunately enough for me, I came in and played really well in 98. It was a great year. Obviously, I'm sure we'll talk about it more, making the playoffs, and they hadn't made the playoffs in a long time. So it was a fun year to play in Chicago.
What was your thoughts on the Cubs coming over? Because, I mean, they were awful in 97. They started the year 0-14. Sammy hadn't become, quote-unquote, Sammy. And Kerry Wood hadn't popped on the scene either. So, I mean, did you think you were coming to a club that was even going to play .500 baseball?
Well, first off, I lived in Valparaiso, Indiana. That's where my wife's from. So, if I had to get traded, coming to Chicago would have been my choice because I could live at home and drive back and forth into Wrigley and things. So, the trade personally was good for me because I was excited to stay at home. And I always loved playing in Wrigley. I always hit well there. But I didn't know what to expect. I mean, we picked up Henry Rodriguez, Jeff Blauser, Rod Beck, Kevin Tappany, I think we picked up that year. So we picked up a lot of quality players, not superstars, but guys that knew how to play the game, knew how to win. And, who knew what Sammy was going to do that year? He was obviously a very good player, but he exploded that year. And Gracie was Gracie, you know. I don't remember what we were picked. I want to say middle of the pack, probably.
Yeah.
We kind of clicked in May and kind of took off from there. And, the fans, you never have to worry about the fans in Chicago. They always come out and support you. And it was just a fun, fun year with a great group of guys.
I was going to bring up the Valparaiso part. I didn't know that you had been living there beforehand, but I knew that year you did. So you were driving an hour plus back and forth to the park, on home games?
About an hour. But the times that I came back and forth, the traffic really wasn't bad because you normally played, 120, 220 games. So you'd leave the place at 9. You kind of missed that rush hour traffic. And for me, it was nice because I could, kind of be by myself and prepare myself mentally for the game on the drive in and, play a game. And then it was fun going home because I knew I had the evening to myself with my family and could hang out and do normal things. And love day games. I would have played every day in Wrigley at a day game. I love day games.
So that brings me back to Cubs time before that, where the thought was that playing day games wore the team down. That was the excuse on the 69 club, that those guys were tired because it was all day games. And it was a huge fight, by the way, back, no lights at Wrigley before they got them in 88. But did you think it wore you down playing day games? Apparently, I'm thinking, it sounds like no.
I didn't think so. And you get your share. I mean, we had our share of night games. And I think, right. I remember how many we played, maybe 15, 20 night games. But you always played night games on the road. So it wasn't like you played 162 day games. You know, you probably played 60 to 65 day games at home and, a certain number on the road. But, I liked it because I got home at a good hour. I could go to bed early. I could, get my normal sleep. And, usually when you play a night game, you don't go to bed till 1 a.m. because you're all wound up and you sleep in till noon. And I don't know if that's healthy for you either. So, like I said, as long as you, you know, you're prepared properly, you ate well, you got your rest, day games were fine for me.
Yeah. So when Sammy starts going and he hits 20 bombs in June and you're the two hitter. So I forget exactly how it all broke down, how much he hit three and how much he hit four, but I remember him hitting three for the most part. Am I accurate there?
Yeah. Normally. Yeah. I think when he got on his roll, he hit third and Gracie hit fourth and then Henry Rodriguez hit fifth. But yeah, that June that he had was nothing I'd ever seen before. I mean, 20 home runs in 30 days is just, it's silly, really. It's stupid home runs, really. But he just got on a roll, and I think I saw a stat that he had 9 multi-homer games. I mean, that's incredible. He hit 20 homers in June. I hit 32 in 10 years. So it was incredible. And that's kind of when we got on our roll, you know, mid to late May, early June. That's when we kind of started playing really good baseball and really forming that bond as a team. And Sammy obviously was a huge part of it.
Did you think that anything quote unquote funny was going on, that this might be an enhanced performance?
You know, I really didn't think about it back then. I really didn't. You know, it came to play a few years later, I guess, but baseball had been down. You know, we had the strike. Yeah. And baseball, the fans weren't coming back like we thought they would. And then all of a sudden this home run thing starts taking place. And now all the fans start coming back. They're showing interest. And that's really what I cared about, was winning baseball games and playing in front of big crowds and things like that. So for me personally, I didn't even really think about that.
Yeah. What was he like in the clubhouse? Because I know over time, like when he finally left in 04, he did not leave on good terms, and he still hasn't been invited back to the club, which is a whole nother topic. But yeah. What was it like in 98 with the team?
Well, I was with Sammy for 2 years, 98-99. Yeah. He was a pleasure. He was a great teammate, and I've never seen anybody enjoy playing the game like he did. I mean, he just loved to play the game. You know how he'd run out to right field and salute all the fans and, you know, in the bleachers, and always had a smile on his face, always laughing and enjoying himself. And I thought he was a great teammate for 2 years. I really did.
See, I love hearing that, because to me, and I hear both sides. Like when Kerry talks about him, he'll be like, that dude came to play every single day. And we just had last week on the podcast, I talked to Jeff Pentland, who was your hitting coach. He came over midway through 97 and stayed through 02. So you had him both years. And he was talking how he would flip to Sammy 40 minutes. Yeah. Like the guy was a worker. And I think people look at him like, you know, all the this stuff and blowing to the camera, but people don't realize how much he actually put into his craft.
He did. He worked at his hitting daily. I mean, he was the first one in that cage. And like you just said, he was in there for quite a while until he felt good, until he felt comfortable. He would stay in that cage. And yeah, he worked really hard. Now, I wish Sammy would have worked a little bit harder on his defense at that time. Because, yeah. You know, when he first came up, he had a cannon for an arm. And he was a pretty good defensive right fielder. And he kind of let that go a little bit because he was such a good hitter. He concentrated on his hitting mainly. He kind of lost his arm strength and some of his defensive ability. I wish he'd have concentrated a little more on that too. But, he was a very hard worker as far as hitting is concerned.
So that's interesting that you say that, because I always thought that the defensive part was because he was bulking up and he didn't have the flexibility to throw like he once did. But you're also throwing out there that he had such a focus on at the plate that maybe that was also part of it.
Yeah, I don't think he threw as much, you know, during that time. And to maintain a strong arm, you got to continue to throw long toss and things like that and work on your arm strength. And I don't think he really worked on that at that time of his career. But the hitting part, like I said, yeah, he busted his butt.
Yeah. So what was the relationship like from your perspective with him and Mark?
At times I thought it was pretty good. At times I think they kind of tolerated each other.
Yeah.
Because Sammy was kind of loud at times, you know, and Gracie was a little more laid back. And, you know, Gracie took the game really seriously, and Sammy had a little bit more fun with it, I think. And at times they butted head a little bit. But, you know, I played with Sammy in his two best years. So when you're hitting 60 some homers for two straight years, or what was it, 66 and 62 or whatever he hit, it's hard to not be happy. You know what I mean? Yeah. And in 98, we were winning and everything was clicking. So I never saw Sammy when he wasn't playing well or had a bad month. I mean, for the 2 years I was with him, he was pretty much as good as you can be.
So I want to go back to the clubhouse itself. So I'm 25 years old. It's my first time covering a baseball team. And just on the home side, I was a radio guy, so I wasn't traveling with y'all. But I would go in that clubhouse after a game, and you would have Grace and Rod Beck, RIP, great man, Matt Karchner, Blauser. These guys were, I mean, like, the bar was open. It was a different culture than, you know, later in your career. And, I mean, you came up with the Phillies, so, you know, that team had a lot of fun too. I don't remember you being my memory of Mickey Mordee in that time is you were pretty focused on playing and maybe not hanging out like those guys did. But there was an old schoolness to that team that you wouldn't see today. I mean, what are your – how would you compare that clubhouse to, say, the 93 team or your Phillies experience period?
I think that team was as close as we could get to the 93 team. I mean, in 93, there were a lot of veterans on that team, but after games, we would all go into the training room, eat, ice up, whatever we had to do, but we would sit around and talk baseball. We'd talk about the game we just had. We'd talk about the game that's coming up tomorrow, good things, bad things. It was a routine that we really did. There was probably 10 to 15 players in that training room after the game, just hanging out, talking baseball. And that was similar to what we did with the Cubs. And like you said, with all the veterans that we had on there, we had fun that year, but we were very focused. And we had a good mixture of veteran players and young players, like Carey coming up, and Kevin Ory was young at the time. And, you know, there were a couple other young players that we had in the bullpen. And Brant Brown was a young player then, but it was a really good mix, and we had fun, but when we had to focus for the game, we definitely did that.
Couple of specific moments. So you brought up Kevin Ory in the 20 strikeout game, little number to his left. Not a tough play, but maybe a play that he should have made. I know he beat himself up about it. Is that E5? Should that 20 strikeout game be a no hitter?
Well, and you look back on it. You know, if I'm watching the play before I know what happens, that's a really tough play, and it took a weird kind of hop. It kind of stayed down on him. So I'm going to say no, it probably wasn't an error. Was it a play that could have been made? Sure. But I don't think that really takes away anything from what Kerry Wood did that day. That was the best stuff I've ever seen one pitcher have on a particular day. It was unbelievable.
Did you know in spring training, not that he was capable of that, but did you know that this guy's got, if he stays healthy, is going to dominate?
I knew he had incredible stuff. The issue was with him back then was his command. At times he really lost it and couldn't throw strikes. But on that particular day, he was electric with his fastball, and he was throwing strikes with it. And that breaking ball was the best breaking ball I'd ever seen in my life. I mean, it was breaking 8 to 10 feet. And he made that Houston Astros lineup, which was really good. I mean, they had some really good hitters in that lineup, looked just silly.
Yeah, it was – I mean, still watching the highlights of it, it's like, oh, my God, this guy is – I mean, Biggio, Bagwell, Derek Bell. That was a club. So you get in the playoffs, and game two, Tappany pitches a gem. I think he gives up a homer to Javi Lopez in the ninth, right, with one out, I want to say. And then in the 10th, you get on, you steal second, and they call you out. You were safe, right?
Yeah, I was. That's the one time I think I wanted replay, because I'm not a big replay guy. I got in there, and they called me out. And that was obviously a big game. I mean, Tap pitches his butt off. We have a chance to even – I think it was even the series, right? Yep. Go 1-1. And there's a huge difference there. 1-1, 2-0. I think we were coming home then. But it is what it is. You know, there's a lot of things I can look back on and wish they were a little bit different. But, we had a chance to win a couple games, and we didn't do it.
What do you remember about the wild card game against the Giants?
I remember how electric that ballpark was, that's for sure. I mean, it was – that's about – other than – the 93 Phillies playoff, and we were playing in front of 50,000 fans at Vet Stadium. Other than that, that was one of the loudest crowds I've ever been a part of. And the Gaetti home run, the place just blew up. I mean, it just blew up. And it was a great game, you know, well pitched, great defense, not a lot of hitting. And it was just a relief to get into the playoffs. I know the city had been suffering for a long time. What was it, 84? Was that the last time they had gotten in? It's been a long time.
Yeah, 89. They got 89. In 89. Yeah, lost in five.
And, they backed us all year. And, you know, the things leading up to it was Sammy's incredible home run race there. And, you know, the Brant Brown drop in left field that almost cost us a spot. And but it was a lot of fun. It was really exciting. And other than the 93 season for me, I had never been in like a playoff run like that. So it was kind of new to me. It was really exciting.
So since you brought up Brant Brown, one of my favorite people in baseball history was Ron Santo. I don't know how well you got to know him that year, and Ronnie's passed away now for a while, but you're up. I think you were up 3 in the ninth. And the Brewers score 4, and Brown drops the ball. I was at that game, and my friend's jumping up and down because he thinks it's over, and I'm looking at him like, he dropped it. they lost. I guess the story is that Santo was in Riggleman's office with his head down, and just like the season was over, and the manager is telling the broadcaster and the former player that don't worry, Ronnie, we'll come back and get him. Do you remember that at all? I'm sure it sounds familiar.
I don't remember that, but I'm sure it's true because we know Ronnie was the biggest Cubs fan out there. I loved Ronnie. We did have a nice little relationship there for a couple of years. I loved Ronnie, and I remember his call on that too. I think he screamed, "Oh no, no!" it was a tough loss. I mean, I think there were maybe a handful of games left, and you know, it almost cost us. But luckily for Brant, and Brant, like you said, he's a great guy. He was a fun teammate to have and a good dude. Luckily, it didn't come back to haunt us.
Great talent too. He could hit bombs. You know, play a bunch of outfield spots. Yeah. Career could have lasted a little bit longer. What do you remember about you lose on the final day to the Astros and you're walking off the field and you need help now, and Nefi Perez and the Rockies came through to you, but there had to be a moment there where you're like, the season's over, this sucks.
There was, and in Houston, it was a long walk. We were at the Dome, I believe, right? It was still the Dome. There was a very long walk from the dugout to the clubhouse. So we lose that game, and we look at the scoreboard, and I think it was tied in Colorado, and the Giants were tied. We're all dejected as we're walking up to the clubhouse. And as soon as we got into the clubhouse, Nefi Perez hits the home run, and we're saved, and we live another day. And it went from complete, you know, we're done, we're out of it, it sucks, to, yeah, you know, we're still in it. We got a chance to get back to the playoffs. So it was – just like that, it was a different emotion.
Yeah. So long gone summers, this coming up this Sunday night here. And if you're listening to it afterwards, well, then maybe you saw the documentary. But so what are you're in St. Louis, Traxel's on the mound, McGuire's going for 62. He takes him out, barely gets over the wall. But, you know, as he's rounding the bases, you know, watching the highlights, he shakes Grace's hand, he shakes your hand. I mean, that's kind of a weird moment. You're competing, you're in a playoff chase, but yet you want to honor the guy.
It was a weird moment. I look back on it, and I'm like, why are you shaking his hand? You know, it's two teams that don't like each other, and he just hit a home run off you. And I know Traxel didn't like that. I remember that. He wasn't real happy with us. But, you know, I saw Gracie do it, and I'm like, you know, this is such a monumental moment. You know, give him a little nux or something. So I did. And I think, I don't know who was at short.
I think it was Jose Hernandez.
And then I know Scott Service did something to him at home. It was such a monumental moment that you had to do something for it. But yeah, that was pretty exciting. And having the Maris family there. And then after they hit the home run, Sammy came in and they, you know, had a big thing, and it was exciting. It was, that month was just out of control with the way they were just going back and forth with home runs until maybe the last maybe the last week or so, and then McGuire kind of, you know, took off and Sammy cooled off. But, you know, McGuire hit one, Sammy'd hit one. Sammy'd hit one, McGuire hit one. It just went back and forth. It was incredible.
Yeah, I watched the doc, and I had forgotten Sammy went ahead of him. He was up 66-65. McGuire hit the last five, and yeah. You know, you guys were playing Houston, and they're playing the Expos, so that obviously favored Mark in the pitching matchup. But he had the lead. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
It was, and you know, I look back. I mean, and we've already talked about 20 homers in a month and 9 multi-homer games, and he hit some big homers for us. It wasn't like he wasn't hitting big homers for us. He hit some really big homers for us that won ball games for us or tied ball games for us. And just one of those years where he put everything together and was enjoying the game.
What was it like playing with Riggleman?
I liked Jim as a manager. He was a strategic guy. You know, he lefty on lefty, righty on righty, pinch hit for this guy, pinch hit for that guy, double switched a lot. He did a lot of things by the book, but I loved playing for him. You know, you go out, play the game the right way. He has no problem with you. And, you know, fortunate enough for me, it was a career year for me. I had career highs in like 6 different categories that year. And I attribute it to hitting in front of Sammy and Gracie, because I saw a lot of fastballs. Guys wanted to challenge me so they wouldn't have to face those guys with guys on base. And I kind of put everything together that year. And defensively, I was always good defensively, but I had my best defensive year that year. I think my fielding percentage was like .992 or something. And I loved playing in Wrigley. I really did. Just the grass field and the atmosphere and, like I said, day games. It was just a lot of fun.
So how would you describe it to the recreational softball player that you're talking to right now, who just always, you know, if I could pick one thing in life that I would want to do, would be a professional athlete in whatever, and literally in any sport. I love playing baseball, but basketball, tennis, whatever. Like what, like running out on that field and being in that spot, like how would you describe it?
Whew, that's a good question. Exhilarating, exciting. Those really are two words that I can do. It was a lot of fun. It was like I was a little kid, you know, just running out on the field like I was playing in a little league game. And, you know, I had all my friends and family watching me play a little league game. You know, and I always got to watch Sammy go out because he, you know, fly by me as I was going to second base, and to see the right field crowd standing and screaming and him, you know, saluting them. And it was just like you were playing a kid's game. It really was.
But you also like have to throw in there, there's the pressure to perform. So I feel like a lot of guys, I mean, it's got to be sweet, but then, you know, hey, if I don't play well, then I'm not going to be here, and then I'm going to lose out on the experience and the dough. It's a lot on you.
It is, and I always put a lot of pressure on myself, but I for one, did not like to lose. I was a sore loser. No matter what I did, and my wife will attribute that even when I played my kids and like when they were young in little board games, I'd have to beat them because that's just my mentality. I do not like to lose, and I put a lot of pressure on myself. And just for me that year, everything clicked. I got into a good routine at the plate. I saw the ball good for most of the year. I put the ball in play. I had a career high in walks, which means I was seeing the ball really good. I had a career high in home runs. I hit 8 that year. Now, 8 home runs for me was a lot. I think my career high before that was 3. I just, you know, when you play with good players, it elevates your game. And for me to be out on the field with Gracie and Sammy and Lance Johnson and Lauser and that crew, and then you see Tappany on the mound and Kerry Wood on the mound and Traxel and Mark Clark and that group, it really just elevated my game because I didn't want to be the one that wasn't playing well. And it worked out for me that year.
Do you know what place you finished in the MVP voting that year?
24th.
Yeah.
I got one vote from a Chicago Raider. I forget who it was.
I was, you know, I'm looking through your stats. I'm like, Mickey finished 24th in the MVP voting. That's, I mean, you got it. Come on.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. I mean, I did. I had a great year that year. I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm not bragging, but I was a big part of why we went to the playoffs. And I know Sammy and Gracie were the two obviously heads of that team, but I played really, really well. And I'm proud of that.
You should be. And I'll underline that again for you, because the Cubs had not had somebody in the top of the lineup who could be in that quote unquote two role and or a leadoff guy for a long, long time. Really, I mean, I guess you go back to 89 and Jerome Walton had a great year, at least a good first half of the year. I think he had a 30-game hitting streak. But and then if you go forward like to the 03 team that got back in, well, that team took off once Kenny Lofton came over and was able to fulfill that role. And you look at the 16 Cub team, and this is not just about the Cubs, it's about everything, but that team and 15, they benefited greatly with having Dexter Fowler at the top. Right. And so that goes into a bigger baseball discussion, like, you know, well, you don't need the prototypical leadoff hitter. It's like, hold on a second, man. Like, getting guys at the top of the order that can get on for 3 and 4 and 5, to me, that's always a huge thing.
I think so. And Lance Johnson was just as good. I mean, he was a different type of leadoff hitter because he was pretty much a free swinger. He didn't walk a lot, but he could hit. He was fast. And then, you know, I'm in the two hole, left-handed hitter. I can use the hole. I can bunt. I can hit and run. And, you know, a lot of the reasons – I think Sammy had 150-some RBIs that year. It wasn't because he had 150 home runs, you know what I mean? I mean, he was driving me and Lance in a lot. And we were the table setters. And, you know, you have me and Lance on first and second. Now you got to face Grace, Sammy, or Sammy Grace and Henry Rodriguez. You're in trouble.
Yeah.
And Henry had a great year too. I think he had almost 30 home runs too. And yeah, we had Glenn Allen Hill, who was, you know, hitting 500-foot bombs. I mean, that lineup was really pretty good.
Was that the year that he put it on the roof? Was that 98, or was that maybe a year before?
I think it was 98. I think I remember that. That was just silly. It was stupid power. He just crushed it. He was a big boy.
Oh, my God.
Big boy.
Yeah. So you guys go to the World Series in 93, and then 94 comes the strike. I guess you weren't really robbed of anything that year, but still, you're playing when the World Series doesn't happen. And I'm just curious, you know, what are your thoughts about what's going on right now? The players and owners can't get together here. We're in the middle of a pandemic. People want to see baseball. It's an opportunity for baseball. So I don't know, from your perspective, is it just painful to watch, or what would you say?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much the way every other negotiation has gone. They start out far apart. They have war of words. You know, they're after each other. And then as it gets closer to crunch time, and they got to get something done. Oh, and all of a sudden now we're going to find a part in the middle here. We're going to start discussing it. I think they'll get it done. I think they're smart enough to know that they cannot not play a season this year. So they'll get it done, and it better be soon. That's all. And then they did. They missed the boat on being the first pro team to get out there and get live, you know, get on live television, because people are craving for baseball right now, and I think we need it. But they kind of missed the boat on that. But I think by maybe the end of this weekend, hopefully it's close to getting done.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Let me rewind one more time back to that 93 Phillies team. And, I mean, Mitch Williams was a Cub for a second too. And you guys were right there. And then I guess Lenny's been in the news just a ton. I mean, what do you remember playing with him? You know, some good and a lot of bad there as far as keeping himself together. But I mean, that's one of the craziest groups in baseball, at least somewhat recent history.
Yeah, I mean, that was an unbelievable team, and we had great leadership in Darren Dalton. He was one of the best leaders I ever seen in the clubhouse. But Lenny was just so focused that year. He usually hit first, and I'd hit second, and we would be on the, you know, on the on deck circle, getting ready to start the game. He'd go, "I'm going to work this count to 3-2, and I'm going to take this guy deep." He'd tell me that, and I'm not lying. He'd go out and he'd do that. That's how focused he was. And he should have won the MVP that year. He had unbelievable numbers. That's probably the most focused I've ever seen a player.
It's interesting hearing you say that. He's underrated historically. That guy was incredible. When he was going right, Incredibly tough out, incredibly tough competitor, all of it. And a great center fielder, too.
Yeah. He just needed to stay healthy. He was always banged up. He always – because he played the game so hard, you know, head first, diving in the outfield, all kind of stuff. And injuries really, really shortened his career. But 93, he stayed healthy, and he just put up some incredible numbers.
Yeah. Are you missing the game right now? What would you say about that?
I am missing the game. I'm the Phillies team ambassador right now. Right. And, you know, I always got to go to all the home games and hang with fans and sponsors and watch the games and talk baseball and go out into the community and do a lot of stuff for the Phillies. And I'm missing all that. And I'm going to be honest, I'm tired of watching games where I know the outcome. You know, I want something live here where I see how the finish plays out. But I'm missing baseball, and hopefully by the end of this month, we'll have it back, I hope.
Yeah. Let's wrap up with this. If you had a Hall of Fame vote, Mickey, would you vote for Barry and Roger and Sammy or no?
Yes.
You would?
I would. Barry Bonds is the best player I've ever seen play in my time. Just the things he did on the field were incredible. Sammy put, you know, they say you should make the Hall of Fame if you've changed your era somehow. You know, you had an impact, and Sammy had one of the biggest impacts in the 90s of anybody. 500 home runs, right? Just unbelievable. And another one is Roger Clemens. I mean, he wins 7 Cy Youngs and 300 wins, and these guys deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, no doubt about it. I mean,
there's just that other whole side of it, like the, you know, obviously the they cheated, I did it right side that's in the Hall. I mean, Frank Thomas speaks to that all the time. And people, it seems like there's a movement that way. But, like, what would you say to the quote-unquote old-school guys who, like, no chance?
Well, you know, I don't know what to say to them because they have the point. And, to an extent, I agree with them because I did it right. You know, I did it right. And I think I got, I should have had a couple gold gloves that I didn't win. Is it because of steroids? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe some of the other guys that won them did it. I don't know. But I just know what talent they were, with or without steroids. Those three, just that we were talking about, were unbelievable talents. They changed the game. They have records across the board. I just think they deserve to be in. If you want to put an asterisk by it, or you want to, you know, say that, you know, it's possible that these guys have cheated or something, that's fine. But I think they deserve to be in.
Yeah, that's what I think. I don't forget about the asterisks. I just think on their plaque, and maybe they'll bother some of them. But like, was, you know, played, and those who admitted, like if McGuire would ever get in, that's a different guy. But right. played in the era, admitted to, and then, you know, I mean, that would be the same thing for A-Rod. You know,
I mean, are we 100% sure that some of the guys that are in didn't do it?
We're not.
We're not, right?
Yeah, we're not.
There may be guys in there that did do it, so. I guess it is what it is. We'll see. I know they only have a few more years of votes, right? Bonds and Clemens and those guys. So
I think they're about halfway through. Yeah,
I'm sure the Veterans Committee probably won't put them in. That's for sure.
So. That's a fair bet right there. Hey, Mickey, great to see you. I really appreciate you doing this. It was awesome to talk to you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. We got it. I hope we got it all. I'm sure we do. Dude, you were great. I really – thanks a lot.
No problem.
Yeah, and have you – I take it you haven't seen the doc?
No, isn't it supposed to be on this?